accession number 26845, reel 3.
Mr. Bennett, reel 3. We were talking about your time on HMS Blankney from right about April 1942 through to the end of your service in 46 and so. And we were discussing the watch duties and the duties, the watch system and your duties in the engine room. Now, you mentioned three parts to what your responsibilities. There may be some more, but we'll take these three first. The engine room, the boiler room, and the gearing room. Now, could you explain what your responsibilities were in each of them and how the three rooms fitted together to propel the ship, if that's not too...
Maybe that's a bit too premature, because don't forget that when I joined ship, I was green, had my green coat on, and I had to get qualifications to go down the engine room. I had to, first of all, get training as a for my boiler room certificate, and then my engine room certificate.
Oh, well, so let's go your way then.
That's long before I could go down the engine room on my own, kind of thing. And
so tell me about the training for your certificates then. Which was first?
Well, all your training for an ERA, is, as I say, is on aboard ship. And the engineer officer is entirely responsible for my training, along with the chief ERA. And it's those two gentlemen who have to train me from the very beginning on all the aspects of
Where did they start you?
Well, they start me off, first of all, mainly in the boiler rooms, so that I know what all the boiler room work is about.
Now, could
steam,
you tell us...
and everything else.
Well, tell us a bit about it. What was it? What were you doing in the boiler room?
Well, as an acting petty officer, I didn't carry any weight as regards supervision or anything of that nature. The chief ERA would give me various duties to do. As for instance, when we were in harbour, then I would have to go and renew boiler gauges, all the machinery in the boiler rooms. I would have to be conversant with it, the working of it, where all the valves were, where every valve in the ship was, to be candid. Warrant officer, would give me certain work to do, and I'd have to study. You were issued with what you might call a Tiffy's Bible, which covers all aspects of ERA duties, engine room spaces and the procedures and everything else. So I was always have to refer to that book and get to know a lot of the things by heart. So there's quite a bit of training from that point of view before I even get to ERA third class.
So you started on the boiler room certificate and then moved on to the engine room certificate.
Yes, the boiler room certificate is given to you or allocated to you from the ship's officer. The engineer officer aboard ship can give you a boiler room certificate. But then that qualifies you then to sit an examination for engine room artificer. And that means no one less than a commander can give you that, or can take you on that one. So it's quite a lot of work to do before you sit for your engine room exam.
Now, you've got a couple of engineering skills. You've got one apprenticeship as a plater. You've got another skill as a semi-skilled, as a polisher. But were there gaps in your education? In other words, were there things that you were having to learn for the first time?
You see, an ERA is covered on three main trades. You either got to be a boilermaker, a fitter, a general engineer, a fitter, or a coppersmith, which is all copper work, pipe work and things like that. So you've got to be one of those three categories before you can sit.
Now, which were you training for, which of those three?
Well, as you start up as a boilermaker, in my case, so that side of it is okay. It's the engine parts, the fitting part, the engineering side of it that I would have to concentrate on. And I would have to know where all service lines were aboard ship.
What do you mean by service lines?
Main steam lines, superheated steam lines, saturated steam, steering gear lines, you know, from the bridge down to the steering flat, pump lines, fire mains, main suction lines, which suck out, which take the water from various compartments. So I would have to know all that, plus the lubrication systems aboard ship. It's quite a complex thing to have, and the engineer officer would test me on all these things, and so would the chief ERA. Once I'd got my boiler room ticket, then things warmed up a bit. The engineer officer in this case was pretty hard on me, and he would stop me at all times, and even send for me at 9 o'clock in the evening. I would be ready for turning in. He would send for me in his cabin with my books, and I would have to take my books and show him the work I'd done from the last time.
Now, who was the engine room officer?
He was a warrant officer. He was an ex-ERA, and they're the worst because they know most of the routine for an ERA, so he's well educated on that.
Do you remember his name, by any chance?
Warrant Officer Tiffin.
Tiffin?
Tiffin. T-I-F-F-I-N.
And what was he like to you? I mean, he seems to run you about, but was that good? I mean, in a way, that could be good.
Yes, he was a very good, engineer, no doubt about that. And he was very keen on, probably he picked on me because he thought he would get better results. There was another petty officer aboard who was not so well educated, if you like, or had the brain power, not his fault. But he'd got very little interest at all, so I think he was left to his own devices a bit. And I don't think he ever reached other than a PO, petty officer. So there are some that are good and some that are not very good at.
So although he ran you about, or ran you ragged,
oh,
that
yeah,
was good,
ragged,
really.
Yeah. He would stop me on the upper deck. He'd say, number two magazine's flooded. What are you going to do about it?
Now, what would you do about
there's
it?
There's a fire on the stoker's mess. Where's the nearest fire hose and that? Where's the nearest isolating valve? He'd say the starboard side has had a hit. Where are the isolating valves for that side of the ship? Because in the old days, services run down each side of the ship, port and starboard, so that if one lot of mains got damaged, you could shut that down. So yes, I had a very tough time, but he was very fair with me, very good.
Now, would you be you'd be training while you were doing the duties at the same time then?
Yes, you see, I didn't keep a watch as such aboard on down the engine room spaces. I would have a day job or assist wherever was necessary aboard ship. If you're on sea duties, then you couldn't do any repairs or alterations or whatever to moving machinery, but if we were in harbour, then we would have to get our sleeves up and get moving on any work that was necessary. That could be stripping down governors or
now what would that entail?
Separators.
Can you give us an idea what some of these jobs entail, the actual physical work you had to do?
Well, the rings on pumps would have to be changed. There's a life on some things on glands, some boiler valves, and that would have to be redone. Things like that, leaking, anything showing a leak while we were at sea had to be attended to when we got in harbour. Valves that were letting by, valves that when were shut were leaking or whatever, then they would have to be stripped and attended to, ground down. There was loads of things like that. The steering gear had to be ventilated, as you might term it, checked for air blockages and things. So there was lots of work to be done when.
Sounds like you were pretty busy in harbour.
Well, we were quite busy in harbour, yes, generally.
And what about at sea?
Well, it depended on the sea time you did, and as I say, we were always at sea, very rarely in harbour. So
what would you
when
do
we did get in harbour, we were very busy.
So what did you do at sea, you? I mean, you know, in your early days, I mean, you know, I know you were there for nearly 4 years with them.
Well, there's, as I say, there's certain spares that have to be attended to. When you take one part out, you put another one in. So you would be doing those. You would be stopping a cock, for instance, a glam cock, water gauges. Doing lots of things like that. It's a job sometimes to remember what you do. There was always pretty well to do.
Any particular figures? I mean, the injury room officer, that warrant officer Tiffin, was obviously important to you. What about any other figures that you remember from the ship, either in your engineering department or the captain or whatever?
Well, one of the duties was a pretty nasty one, and that was to aboard the Blankney. We had stabilisers. They weren't terribly good, they were in the early stages. Stabilisers were not heard of much in those days. But Blankney was fitted with stabilisers, and we had a Captain Powlett.
Powlett?
Our Captain Powlett, yes, he was pretty strict officer, if ever there was one.
What was he like? Well, before we talk about the stabilisers, let's talk about Captain Powlett. What was he like as a captain?
He was a one-off, for a start. His nickname was Piggy, aboard ship. Very strict man, very strict officer indeed. One for himself, of course. The captain's job is they're inclined to be. It's a lonely life for them, in any case. But he was a very, very strict person. That was for routine.
Did that make him
a very, very efficient skipper?
Did it make him unpopular, his strictness with
the
crew?
He was a bit unpopular from that point of view, but I think everyone aboard ship had confidence in him. He was such an efficient skipper.
Now, what about
that? I think everyone had respect. He was respected very, very much.
Was he a distant officer? You know, by distant,
yes.
He didn't chat to you?
No.
I mean, didn't speak to you, not chat. I mean,
no. He was very distant, very rarely was in conversation. To my knowledge, he was never in conversation with any of the ratings.
What about the other officers? The Jimmy the One, the first
Jimmy
officer?
The One was fairly good.
Do you remember his name?
Welsh, I think.
Lieutenant Welsh.
Mm.
What was he like? I mean, he had a big role in running the ship, I presume.
He was fairly good. Of course, he was the captain's right-hand man. And it was his responsibility for the way the ship was run, really. Orders came through Jimmy the One. Jimmy the One either made or broke.
And what was Welsh like?
Fairly good. As I say, ERAs, the engine room branch, didn't have a lot to do with the officers, really. It's two quite distinct sections of a ship, really, lots of ways. The technical side and the upper deck side, gunnery and things like that. And I think in a lot of, especially destroyers, there was a little bit of lack of understanding with what went on in the engine room and what went on the bridge. And swinging round throttles and reaching at some time. So from that point of view, that was the only thing I noticed, was the lack of understanding, if you like, between the bridge and the engine room.
Do you think the officers were generally competent?
Oh yes, generally.
Was the ship a happy ship? You know what I mean by happy.
That's one of the main things I was going to mention to you when, in the early days when I joined ship, and you asked me about the what it was like. One of the first things that I did notice, and that was, it was a very happy ship, and that continued right through to captain commissions, until the last one we had, which was a Lieutenant Brown. But right up to our paying off, it was quite a happy ship, really.
Now, what made it a happy ship? Was it the officers, or the men, or the petty officers? What made it happy?
Well, I don't think any serviceman would be able to tell you that. I don't think any serviceman would be able to tell you the reason why it was a happy ship. I think, personally, it was the way that as chiefs and petty officers, more than anything else, I don't think it was so much officers, more than the chiefs and petty officers run the ship, not the officers. It was through them, through the officers' orders being given, the chief petty officer had to put that into being. And it was the way they run the ship, the way they dealt with the ratings, and how they managed that side of it, that either made it happy or unhappy. One really bad chief PO could probably spoil the whole ship's company.
How could you tell it was a happy ship? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it was just the way people behaved with one another.
In what way?
It was always joking. You always had to take quite a bit of stick.
Lots of banter then?
Oh, lots of banter. You couldn't get away with anything at all whatsoever. And the difference, the way that the ratings mixed with the POs and the chiefs was very important, really. It was whether you could take what was coming and or not. And the way you perhaps took an order or carried it out. We had our differences, but generally speaking.
And what about discipline? What standard of discipline? I mean, did that
standard of discipline aboard a destroyer varies quite a bit. The discipline is much less severe aboard a destroyer than it is on a big ship. You've got less number of people to deal with. A rating could go along the upper deck of a big ship and meet half a dozen POs or chief POs and have to deal with each one differently, whereas on a destroyer, you probably only get one or two to deal with. And there was a better understanding between ratings than probably they would on a big ship. I would have had a hell of a job to have adapted to a big ship. I'm sure that I may have had the corner off my sheet ripped off if I would have been on a big ship. Fortunately, I didn't have any of that problem.
Now, what about the food on board ship? How was the what messing system were you using on the Blankney?
Food wasn't too bad aboard the Blankney. We had each mess had a messman, and he would prepare the food and then take it up for the chef to cook it.
So it was canteen messing.
Yes,
you were in a group and you had a set amount of money and. Yeah.
That's right, you were allowed so much to live on, and if you could live below that level, you got your money back. And if you lived above it, then you had to pay at the end of the month.
You had a messman for your mess?
In our case, we would have a messman, yes.
In their case, they'd have a cook of the day?
They would have a cook of the day or a cook.
Now, what can you describe the sort of food you'd get? Breakfast, lunch or dinner, whatever you call it, and then supper, whatever you call that, you know.
Well, breakfast, I would, our own mess, we were the only mess who had a tablecloth. We were the only mess who had a tablecloth. Our chief tippy was a bit posser, as we call it. But we managed him. There were three watchkeepers and the two POs. We were pretty well close.
So what food... Tell us what food you get. What do you get for breakfast, then?
Well, we did have a breakfast. We had toast, and we had anything that was tinned, like sardines or whatever, marmalade, things like this.
So very much a simple, easy to prepare.
Yes,
breakfast.
There was no fancy stuff on that kind.
And then lunch?
Well, lunch was, of course, was generally the main meal. And we either had pot mess or something of that nature or whatever.
What's pot mess?
Well, it's stew, beef, or whatever. Mainly beef aboard ship because it used to keep better than... And then we'd get tinned steak and things like that. Tinned vegetables mainly. We did get fresh vegetables on the odd occasions when we entered harbour. But a bit rare. We did pretty well on the ERA's mess.
And what about for tea or supper?
Well, that was either jam.
So bread and jam, not much
jam,
again.
Mainly for tea or whatever that we could get. If we were within, if we were in harbour anywhere, especially if it was not a naval base or whatever like that, we would try and get supplies from ashore somewhere, you know, or fresh vegetables or whatever. If we were foreign, then we would try and some of the foreign goods. I myself, as soon as I was made chief PO, I was burdened with the job of being mess caterer.
We'll come back to that, won't you? Because that's a bit later. Now, what about the rum ration? Was that?
Yes, that was 11 o'clock every day.
And how was it issued?
It was in a fanny, as they termed it, which was in a can. And in our case, the messman would take the fanny and he would get how many tots that were allocated to the mess, and he would get that issued every day at 11 o'clock.
And how was it actually issued to you? It was poured.
Well, in the case of chiefs and petty officers, it was neat rum.
So you had neat, yeah.
Neat rum, but with the ratings, all the ratings are Killick and below, it was 2-1. But that would depend on the severity of the captain of the ship or whoever was issuing the rum, officer. Sometimes they would give it 1-1, but that would be completely unofficial. It was 2-1. For the ordinary rating.
Now, did you ever save or bottle your rum? I know you probably weren't supposed to, but did you?
Well, it doesn't affect me now, so I can tell the truth. Yes. We would save a little drop of rum in the bottle because that was always handy for severe conditions. And also, it was very handy for bartering, for favours.
Explain how it worked. Is this sippers and gulpers and all the rest of it?
Yes, if you did a favour for someone, and he would say, if you do this, I'll give you sippers, which was just a sip of his rum. If it was quite a good turn, a beneficial turn, he would say gulpers. But and sometimes they would barter the tot. But I've never known it... I've never known anyone to drink somebody's tot off, to take his tot. I've never known that. I know it has happened, but the tot was a very, very important occasion in the
Now, how did you save it? You just pour it into a bottle. Did you have to do that secretly? I mean.
Well, yes, of course. But one of my favourite things, I when I first went as a mess caterer, to look after all the needs of the mess. we did so well after the first month that I got the job regularly.
I will come back to that, yeah. I promise you.
So, and it was through the saving of sippers off each one in the mess that gave me a little bit of a little drop of rum to go and barter with when we went ashore.
Did you strengthen the rum you kept in a bottle? I mean, sometimes you used to put raisins in it and things like that.
Well, I believe that was done, but I didn't do any of it personally. Yes, it was a common thing to put.
What about kai or cocoa? Was that important?
Yes, kai was very, very important. It was a good nightcap.
Can you explain what it was? Because it just doesn't seem to exist anymore.
Well, if you took a block of Cadbury's chocolate and made it look a bit more coarse, if you like, more coarse, it was just like that. So you broke that off and put it in a fanny to boil up. And that was your cocoa.
With water or...?
With water.
What proportions?
We always had that... you learn that through experience, but it just depended on the size of your fanny and your block of chocolate is how you liked it, whether you wanted it thick or thin.
And that was a nourishing... I mean,
very, very nourishing drink, yes, very.
What about cigarettes or tobacco ration? I'm not sure. I don't know whether they gave tobacco or rolling tobacco or what on your ship.
Well, an issue every so often when it was convenient for the ship's company, depending on what ship's time you were, sea time you were doing, you got a ration of tobacco. And you could either have leaf tobacco or tin tobacco. Cigarettes were usually sold with naffy, so there was only tobacco that was issued by the service.
Did people still make the pricks of tobacco?
Yes, yep.
Did you?
Well, yes, I used to have it made because my father-in-law was very partial to it. Not supposed to bring it away, of course, but...
So you didn't make it yourself?
No, I used to get someone who was experienced. That was not in my... skill.
Did you smoke then?
Yes, smoke quite heavily.
So what would you smoke? You'd buy cigarettes or...?
Yes, buy cigarettes from the nappy, generally. But yes, we did make our own, because it was quite good tobacco.
And what about recreations in the mess? You know, the sort of... I mean, I know there weren't many of you in there, but five, I think you said, but, I mean, what sort of... How would you spend your... And when you're not on duty, when you're not learning, because you were training, we're on the early part, you said... I mean, was there things like uckers or gambling or anything going on?
Yeah, uckers, and we used to have a game of cards solo, or cribbage was a popular game in those days.
Were these games paid for money, or...?
It depended. It was nearly always money, so much a corner. I don't think there's a great deal of interest in games. Even the boys, even pennies. We would play for pennies even, but it was usually... on so much corner, whatever.
Corner? Is that, well, is that the Ludo?
Uckers or even cribbage, if you were playing a four.
And what about the serious gambling games, Brag and Crown and Anchor?
Crash and things like that, Crown and Anchor, yes.
I mean, were they...
That was a thing that was done on the lower decks, if you like. I didn't come across that much in... We didn't deal in that at all.
So your gambling, such as it was for interest.
That's
and
right.
Pennies and bit of a...
Side.
Any other recreations going on or hobbies?
Not really, unless we had a bit of fun up on the deck when... if we were in tropical places, we would perhaps get a bit of bathing in, but not very often.
And how did you get on with the lads in your mess deck when you first got there?
We were very fortunate in that the chiefs... we weren't in the chiefs and POs mess as such. ERAs had a separate mess. So we were separate from the other chiefs and POs. And we were part, if you like, we were part of the after deck. The after seaman's deck. So that we went down into the seaman's deck, and then in the corner of the mess, we would have our section, which was like built separately from the Siemens Best.